From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition,
our guest, Dr. John Welty, has been a college president for almost 29 years. For the last 22 years, he served as president at California State University, Fresno. During his tenure, he's been responsible for a number of accomplishments. The first of the 23 campus CSU system schools to implement an independent doctoral program. The first of its kind honors program in the CSU system, the Smidkamp Family Honors College. Admission into the Mountain West Athletic Conference. The construction of $425 million in new facilities on campus. And raising over $360 million in private donations, including a recently completed $200 million campaign for Fresno State. Of course, a 22-year leadership tenure is not without its controversies, including a men's basketball team under former coaches Jerry Tarkanian and Ray Lopes, subject to numerous NCAA rules infractions, and several costly gender discrimination lawsuits. As he retires, Dr. Welty looks back at the high points and challenges after serving as a university president for over a quarter of a century, and what the future holds for higher education in California and the San Joaquin Valley. We'll also hear from Pete Mijas, chair of the selection committee, current CSU system trustee, and former superintendent of the Fresno County Office of Education, Bill McEwen, editorial board writer for the Fresno Bee, and Pete Weber, chair of the executive committee of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley, and a member of the advisory committee for the selection of the next Fresno State president. Fresno State President John Welty, a retrospective.
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with executive director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. For the last 22 years, our guest has served as president of California State University Fresno, commonly referred to as Fresno State, a fierce fundraiser whose commitment to academics and research has boosted Fresno State's profile. He'll be retiring as president at the end of the academic school year. Welcome back to the Maddie Report, President Welty.
Thank you.
You've been involved in higher education for quite some time. You've been a university president since way back in the 1980s. How has higher education changed over that time?
Well, I think probably the most dramatic change has been across the country, states have really disinvested in public higher education, and so that has resulted in increased cost to students. I think the second major change has been with the growth of technology and different forms of delivering instruction. We're really, I think, on the front end of some pretty dramatic changes in higher education. And it's not clear exactly where that's going to end, but certainly our ability to be more effective, our ability, I think, to reach students and to provide a richer experience has increased pretty significantly.
What about Fresno State? How have we changed since you arrived in 1991?
Well, there have been a lot of changes, it's a great tribute to the faculty and staff and administrators at Fresno State. The university, I think, has grown in its academic quality and stature. We've certainly expanded the physical plant. We've added academic programs that I think have been a great benefit to the region. And I think we've been able to engage the university with this region in a way that our resources can be used to help address some of the most difficult problems the region faces.
And it's a little unusual. A lot of universities have that town gown problem. We'll talk about that later, but we seem to have done a really good job of connecting the university to the community. What do you view as your greatest accomplishment? You had to pick one. And family is not included.
Right. I think probably the Smidkamp Family Honors College has been one of the most significant things for the university in terms of not only attracting brighter students, but the impact those students have had on the campus and really the work that faculty have been able to complete with the students.
Okay, and on the other side of the equation, if you had to do one do-over, what would it be?
Well, there's probably a long list of those, but I think there may be a couple of hires that we perhaps would have been better off.
And you're not looking at me, are you?
No, not at this point. No. But I think on balance, things have really gone pretty well. Hindsight's always better, but I think in general, with the, as I said, with the exception of a couple of hires, we're we've done pretty well.
You know, you've been described as a fierce fundraiser, and that's a relatively new role for a California State University president. You know, at the major universities, that's pretty common, but at Cal State's, generally not. Why did you see that as important early on in your tenure, and how do you think it's distinguished Cal State Fresno from other Cal State campuses?
Yeah. Well, I think it was when I came in 1991, it was clear that for Fresno State to flourish, we were going to need to depend upon private support, because the downturn in state funding was just beginning at that time. And it was clear that Fresno State had a number of programs that people were willing to invest in that could become distinctive from a national standpoint, and private support can make that difference.
So what is private support used for? If someone was to give dollars to the university, where does that money go?
Well, most private support we receive is designated by the donor. So typically it's someone that's interested in engineering, such as the Lyles family, or someone interested in business, as with Sid Craig. And you can go down the list of many of the major gifts we've received is because the donor has an interest in enhancing that program at the university.
So that money is taken typically and what, scholarships are given to students?
It's typically, the major categories are scholarships, support for faculty, endowed chairs, and then probably facility improvements.
Let me ask you just a follow-up question on that. Endowed chairs, that's extra money given to faculty, essentially to recruit top faculty to come here. Why is that important at a university?
Well, it's extremely important to have the best possible faculty you can. And for an endowed chair, it allows you to attract someone that's a top in their field. That person usually is not only going to do a great job in the classroom and in fact can help attract students, particularly graduate students, but they also are usually pretty effective in generating additional grant support for the university.
And again, when I first came to Cal State University of Fresno back in 1987, that was a pretty rare thing to have an endowed chair at Cal State, and now we have quite a few at the university, don't we?
Well, we have 14 endowed chairs or distinguished professorships, so yes, we have over the years been able to add them, and it has made a difference in a number of areas.
How does that compare to other Cal States? I would think that we're probably at the top end of that.
I would guess, I don't know for sure, but I think if you look at the number of endowed chairs, I think we probably are at the top, or if not there, we're very close.
Over $425 million in new facilities have been built on campus, as well as a myriad of other changes. Well, let's talk about some of your accomplishments. Can't do a laundry list. There's too many to name, but let's focus on maybe your greatest accomplishment, enhancing the academic standing of the university. What do you think that's been?
Well, I think there have been several. Certainly the McCann Family Honors College has played a major role. The addition of three doctoral programs are programs that were desperately needed in Central California and are going to serve, I think, this region for a long time.
And again, that was a new thing for a Cal State. I mean, usually doctoral programs are done by the University of California, not by California State University schools.
That's correct. And we had, when I first came, a joint doctoral program in education leadership, but an independent doctorate that we now have in education leadership, in physical therapy, and in nursing practice, all have come about as a result of legislative change.
Were we one of the first campuses to do that?
We were, yes. We were the first to get approval for the Ed Leadership Doctorate, and we're one of really four or five campuses now that offer both physical therapy and nursing practice.
Okay. What about your greatest accomplishment that has directly impacted students? What would you say that's been?
Well, I think the commitment that we've made to community service and the addition of service learning has had a tremendous impact on students, because I think it's made their educational experience a lot more relevant. Students can see, as they're out in the community doing service, they can see a direct relationship with what they're being taught in the classroom. And I think as a result, feedback we've gotten from students is that that's been a very valuable learning experience for them. It's really improved dramatically their learning experience.
Yeah, it enhances. You learn theory in the classroom, then you apply it in the outside real world, and
right.
Always makes it more relevant to the student.
Yeah, and I think we've been able to engage students in other ways through internships, undergraduate research. That's all really contributed to really creating a great educational experience for students.
Well, let's talk about community engagement. What's been the most impactful thing you think you've done to break down that town and gown divide that occurs in so many universities?
Well, I think we've consciously laid out in our strategic plan that we're going to seek to engage the university with the region. And we've set out to try to do that in really about six areas: in education, agriculture, business, manufacturing, health and human services. And those are ways in which we've very strategically and consciously attempted to either create centers or institutes that would be helpful in providing technical assistance and consulting help and further research to the area. And then I think in more recent years developed really what I would call tightly engaged partnerships with a number of agencies and businesses in the area that really demonstrate what the university can do or what we can contribute in terms of addressing the issues.
Is that kind of also a part of the return on investment? You know, when the taxpayer invests in higher education, it's not just graduating a student, but if they're actually doing things to improve the community while they're in school, it would seem to improve the rate of return.
Well, I think there's no question. As a comprehensive university, a comprehensive public university, we have a responsibility to really give back to the community and use resources that have been supported by the taxpayers in order to help improve that community, as well as provide a good educational experience for students. And that's, I think, one of the important things that we can do and really should be doing.
What about facilities? What would you say has been your greatest accomplishment? A lot of building on campus. What's your greatest accomplishment there?
Well, there have been lots of additions of physical plant. I would say the new library probably is a major addition. It's, I think, helped change the campus more than any other facility on campus, although we've had lots of new buildings that directly serve academic programs.
How much did that increase the library capacity on campus?
Well, in terms of capacity, let's see, it increased the physical plant for the library by about 40%. Mm-hmm. But the use of the library has doubled. And I think it is a library that certainly is no longer...
We hope they're studying
library.
In there.
No, there's no question. You walk in and you see students working in groups on their laptops. You mm-hmm. see their ability to access virtually anything in the world. And it really reflects, I think, the way in which learning has changed. A lot more is being done in groups, teams. That's what the industry is really expecting these days. So students really get some real live experience in that area.
What about athletics? What do you think has been your greatest accomplishment there?
Well, I think there's no question over the years we've had some challenges in athletics with compliance with NCAA regulations, gender equity, and also academic performance. But today, our athletic program is as strong as it has ever been, at least in the 22 years that I've been here. I think we've made a commitment to gender equity that puts us among, if not the top Division I program in the country, among the top
five. Have been some pretty amazing things that have occurred. I remember the baseball team was a big underdog a number of years ago, and no one expected them to win. That was a pretty amazing thing.
That was a great great accomplishment, and that was fun to be part of that. I had very little to do with that, but but that was a team under Coach Batesel that did amazing things, and it was fun to watch them mature and grow and then win that national championship.
Has there been one moment through this tenure that's been your most memorable?
Well, it's really hard to identify one moment. I mean, there's been lots of great highs, certainly the baseball national championship, the softball national championship, beating USC, UCLA, and a few of those other places have been fun in athletics. There's also, I think, been great accomplishments for me, commencement week is really the high of every year because you see the incredible obstacles that students have overcome, and you see how we really help to transform lives. It's right there in front of you in story after story.
And you're signing a lot of degrees.
Yeah.
Perhaps most of our guests' greatest challenges may have come when leading a university with an NCAA Division I athletic program. What are the costs and expectations of running such a program? Well, let's talk about that for a little bit. Recently, Indiana University had a study, and they found that fewer than 10% of athletic departments at D1 public universities generate enough revenue on their own to cover expenses. And that, therefore, subsidies are increasing in athletic departments at a time when academic programs are being cut. Has athletics been the extracurricular activity that's wagging the dog, the tail that wags the dog? No pun intended.
Right. Well, I don't think so, but there's no question a Division I program today is a challenge to generate sufficient financial support. And Fresno State, over the years, the commitment that we've made from general fund dollars has been pretty modest. I mean, we've really relied upon fan support, we've relied upon private support, and most recently additional TV revenue in order to support the program. But it's becoming harder and harder.
It seems like almost like it's an arms race out there. I mean,
well,
you're always reading about the next school who's putting more stuff into their stadium or building a new weight center for their athletes or something.
Yeah, I think unfortunately that has occurred, and certainly those larger programs that have been able to generate large amounts of money have taken and spent that money on facilities and coaches. And it is, I think, a challenge to maintain competitive equity with Division I programs. At the same time, there is a lot of value you get from a Division I program in terms of visibility and student involvement and community involvement in the programs. But I am concerned about the future of Division I intercollegiate athletics.
You know, it's interesting. I was reading some, it just caught my eye that they were talking about building skyboxes at Fresno's stadium, and they said they could generate about $5 million a year. And in the same article, they talked about my alma mater, the University of Wisconsin, that also has skyboxes, but they generate $5 million a game. It's just amazing. Well, the men's basketball team has had its share of controversy with former head coaches Jerry Tarkanian and Ray Lopes. Looking back, how would you have handled those situations differently, or would you have handled those situations differently?
Well, I think, unfortunately, we did not have a strong enough compliance program in place, and that contributed to getting us into the difficulty. I think the important thing was that once we identified there were issues, we moved very quickly to not only report them, but also to take the steps that was necessary in order to put a program in place that has integrity, that's compliant with the rules. And I think we've got a very good program at this point, and there's a culture within that department now that really understands that compliance with rules is absolutely essential.
The other problem has been some highly publicized and costly gender discrimination lawsuits. What went wrong, and what's been done to address that problem?
Well, I think there is. We had issues in gender equity in the late 80s, early 90s. I think we've addressed those issues, and in fact, we, as I said earlier, I think if we're not one of the top programs, we're among the top five in the country in terms of meeting the Title IX gender equity requirements. And I think, again, the culture of the program has changed dramatically so that there is support for both the women's and men's programs in a way that I'm very proud of, because I think coaches are working together, administrators are working together, and we've made major strides in addition to facilities.
Speaking of facilities, Save Mart Center, pretty big facility on campus, multi-purpose arena, men's and women's basketball teams play there. It cost over $100 million. Truth be told, a lot of that was donated by the private sector, private donations, but it's still got a significant mortgage. In retrospect, was building the Save Mart Center a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, I think it was a very good idea. I mean, certainly did provide competitive space for our basketball programs, and the fact of the matter was, if we built just a basketball facility, we could not have afforded it because it wouldn't be used enough. But I think now, with over 140 to 150 events per year in the Save Mart Center, what you see is people coming from all over California to Fresno, as opposed to everybody in Fresno going the other way to attend concerts and other kinds of major
an income
events.
Generator.
And it is an income generator.
I thought I had read somewhere that it was one of the busiest arenas in, not in the country, the world.
That's true. We're actually in the top 50 in the world in terms of the use of the arena and the number of people that attend events.
Well, here's an interesting question I think you might enjoy, and that is, if you had to advise the next Fresno State president, or any university president for that matter, on how to deal with challenges and crises that are inevitably going to occur during someone's tenure, what advice would you give him or her?
Well, I think it's one, important to have thick skin sometimes.
Keep your head low.
And it's also, I think, important that you listen and that you try to evaluate as much information as possible when you're faced with a challenge or an issue, and then take steps to deal with it. Probably the worst thing can happen is you become consumed by a given issue, and it's important to stay focused on where you want the university to go over time. And yes, deal with the crises when they come up, but stay focused on what your real end goal is.
Fresno State President John Welty has seen a lot of changes in higher education during his 29 years as a university president. What does he see for the future of higher education in California and the San Joaquin Valley?
Well, there seem to be three big issues that the governor and the legislature are trying to address: access, cost, and student success and graduation rates. So let's deal with the issue of access. A lot has been said about increasing access through the use of online instruction in those hard-to-get classes. There was a recent New York Times editorial, however, that opined that, quote, they'll work well for highly skilled, highly motivated students, but are potentially disastrous for large numbers of struggling students who lack basic competencies and require remedial education. They go on to say that, quote, the courses would be a questionable fit for first-time freshmen in the 23-campus California State University system, where more than 60% of the students need remedial instruction in math, English, or both. So what do you think? Are online classes the answer to improving access, or are there other better answers?
Well, I think we are on the front end of some dramatic change in higher education, and everyone has been talking about online education. I think the fact of the matter is we haven't yet learn how to most effectively use online education. And I think we're beginning to get some answers, but as you point out, there are probably some students that aren't going to do as well if they're not self-motivated and they're not really coming from a learning background where they've been able to take some initiation and take responsibility for their learning. So I think we are at the front end of what will be dramatic changes. I don't think the answer is going to be all online education. I think what we're going to find is there are certain courses and certain disciplines can use online effectively. But more importantly, I think what we may learn through analytics is how students learn and be able to do a better job customizing the learning experience for students. And if we're able to do that, that's going to make higher education that much more effective.
Well, let's talk about cost. Who should pay for higher education? Should it be the consumer, the student, or the parent? Or should it be the public, i.e. the state? Do we have the right balance?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that the balance is really tipping toward it's the student. And I think, unfortunately, there needs to be more investment by states in public higher education because the states do benefit dramatically from a better educated population. And the fact of the matter is we need a better educated population in order to make sure that our economy continues to flourish in the future. We need that more than any other time in our history. So I'm one that advocates balance, and I think the states do need to figure out a way to invest more in public higher education for the future.
Well, let's talk about cost for a second. How should universities be funded? Should they be funded based on enrollments or graduations?
Well, I think probably both. I think there's no question to encourage access, you've got to have funding. But obviously, I believe we should be held accountable, and graduation rates are one of the ways to do it. Now, I think it is important, in the case of the California State University, to probably use six-year graduation rates because so many of our students have to work. They're limited in how many units they can take, et cetera. A four-year graduation rate for a place like Harvard, that may be a good way to hold them accountable. But there has to be alignment with the mission of the university in terms of how they're funded and held accountable.
You know, you've led a university with a very diverse student population, yet you've managed to increase student graduation rates. So what's the secret to your success?
Well, I think our faculty and staff and administrators have worked very, very hard to increase the graduation rates and to really learn what makes a difference. I think we've learned over the years that it's probably better to provide a more structured learning experience for our students. It's better to engage them, as we talked about before, through service and internships, research, et cetera. I think we're doing more intrusive advising now where we try to identify students that's not doing well in the second week of the course rather than wait till finals week. And all those things have contributed to improved retention and graduation.
I want to fit this last question in, and that is, what would you like your legacy to be as president of California State University of Fresno?
Well, I would hope that people say that Fresno State is a better place than it was in 1991, and they can say that, I'll be satisfied.
Well, that's great. Well, I want to thank President John Welty of California State University of Fresno for joining us. Up next, what impact has Fresno State President John Welty had on Fresno and the San Joaquin Valley?
And what advice do our guests have for the next university president? We'll talk to Bill McEwen, editorial board writer for the Fresno Bee, Pete Weber, chair of the executive committee of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley and a member of the advisory committee for the selection of the next Fresno State president, and Dr. Pete Mijas, chair of the selection committee, current CSU system trustee, and former superintendent of the Fresno County Office of Education.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. President John Welty has had a profound impact on the San Joaquin Valley. We have three veteran Valley observers who are to give us their thoughts of the 22-year tenure of President Welty at California State University Fresno. They are Dr. Pete Mijas, CSU System Trustee and former Superintendent of the Fresno County Office of Education, Pete Weber, Chair of the Executive Committee of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley, and Bill McEwen, Editorial Board Writer for the Fresno Bee. Welcome to the Matty Report. Well, let's start with you, Pete Mijas. And we've got two Petes here, so I'm going to have to say Pete Mijas and Pete Weber for our audience. But Pete Mijas, looking back, what do you view as President Welty's greatest strength?
I assume we mean in terms of leadership skills, not necessarily, and I'm glad you divided strength versus accomplishments. And so I would probably say Dr. Welty's greatest strength was his ability to communicate the importance of the university to the greater community. And his outreach, you know, traditionally sometimes academia gets in their cloistered courts and do not reach out into, quote, the real world. And so his ability to reach out, not just in Fresno, but throughout the Central Valley and communicate the important mission that this institution had, I think that was a strength. And another thing quickly was his, I think his resiliency, his ability to take a hit at times, but bounce back and keep his eye on the ball.
Being a former football player, probably appreciate that. The Pete Weber, you know, the town-gown relationship. President Welty's done a pretty good job of breaking that down. What do you think his biggest strengths are as a leader?
Well, you know, being a university president is enormously challenging. I mean, you've got so many stakeholders that you've got to deal with. And you know, when you think of students, students are not one monolithic group. They're, you know, in a community that is as diverse as ours is, there's all kinds of students with all kinds of interests and backgrounds and so on. Same thing is true of faculty, alumni, donors, and so on. And I think John has done a tremendous job of making himself accessible to all of those stakeholders in a way that, you know, it's just remarkable. I mean, when I think of John, I think of a humble, highly accessible, highly approachable workaholic. I mean, you know, I mean, he's
puts every, in some long hours.
He is sure. Everywhere all of the time. And, that certainly been good for the university.
Bill, what do you think his biggest strength is?
Well, I hear oftentimes people say it's his resilience, and they cite the fact that he's hardworking. I think a lot of college presidents are hardworking. When I look at John Welty's career, what I see is a man that learned from his mistakes. And certainly early on, he made some mistakes, but he learned from them. And one example was the attempt to end Fresno State as an engineering school. There was a backlash against that. He listened to what the critics had to say, and then he went out and raised money and really tried to make it into a better engineering school than what Fresno State had before. So I think that's one example that John didn't take things personally, and he learned from his mistakes.
Pete Weber, what about his greatest accomplishment? What would you say is his greatest accomplishment as president?
Yeah, I'd say service to community. And what I mean by that is that you know, with all due respect to UC Merced, which is still in its infancy, Fresno State is still the University of the Valley. John Welty converted the university into a place that reaches out to the Valley in all aspects. I mean, you know, you've got all of these organizations that he created, you know, the Lyle Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, the Matty Institute, the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley, you name it. I mean, he did so much to reach out to the community and service the entire community. So it is now, I think, understandably recognized as one of the most engaged universities in the country.
That's just following up on what Pete Miha said. Pete, what else do you would say is a great accomplishment of President Welty?
Well, certainly the most visible one is the facilities. I mean, you look at that institution and people who've gone out there. It ain't your mother's old university. It is the facilities, not only the athletic facilities, the science. You take what he has done to change the face of that university. But the lasting accomplishment will be the programs, his ability to generate funds, the SMITCAP Honors Program. Thousands of students have benefited because he got Earl SMITCAP to buy into the Earl SMITCAP Honor Program, which really reduced the brain drain that was leaving the Valley. That's a tremendous legacy, amongst other things.
Greatest accomplishment, Bill?
For me, it's this. Fresno State, as an economic engine for the Valley, was a four-cylinder car that was sputtering along. Now it's a turbocharged engine, and it's from top to bottom, the involvement. You think of the Water and Technology Center. And then the big thing for me is, in addressing our economic need here, we need a skilled workforce. We need a better education system, K through 12. Fresno State was born as a teacher's college. Again, it was kind of sputtering along. It was stuck in tradition. And John Welty reached out and really helped improve the education, the preparation of teachers here in the Valley by the programs that they instituted at Fresno State with the Kremen School of Education. So young teachers today are equipped to handle these huge challenges that they face here in the Valley. I think that's his crowning achievement.
You know, Pete Mijas, Bill was saying earlier about one of the missteps that President Welty had was thinking about shutting down the engineering program, and he learned from those mistakes. What do you see as President Welty's biggest shortcoming? Where has he made his biggest misstep?
I don't think in his intentions, but I think in his implementations of certain programs. I think his Achilles heel was athletics. I think in some cases his athletic directors, but the buck stops with the president. I think in terms of some of the scandals and how it came out into the community, I think the 60-minute national television was a disaster for the Institute. But again, his ability to recognize his mistakes. My bias, when they eliminated soccer and wrestling, these are programs that serve hundreds of kids, thousands of kids in the Central Valley. And so I think the athletics, on the other hand with athletics, what he did for gender equity, what he did in terms of cleaning up a lot of the compliance reviews. So it's both a strength and a shortcoming.
Pete Weber, what do you think about the strengths and weaknesses of President Welty, particularly on the weaknesses side, on the missteps?
You know, a university president has to be a great administrator as well as a great leader. But, you know, he doesn't get much credit for being a great administrator because that's generally taken for granted. It only hits the lights when something goes wrong. And more often than not, it goes wrong in the athletic department. Highly visible, you know, squibs. And so where, you know, Dr. Mihas has, I think, correctly pointed out that that's where the most visible problems have occurred. I think today that the university has a very proud and successful athletic program.
You know, Pete Mihas, I want to go back to you on the question of Dr. Welty as a fierce fundraiser. That's what he's been referred to. And he has raised an awful lot of money. But has that really improved the educational output of Fresno State?
Absolutely. Look at the Richter Center for Community Service. You know, you talk about John Dewey's philosophy in education, learn by doing. Look at the thousands, over a million hours of community service was donated by students last year. So they've learned a great deal about the real world. You look at the Lyle School of Entrepreneurship. They're learning firsthand in terms of what it's like to risk capital and get involved. So, yes, his fundraising efforts have significantly improved, I believe, the quality of education of the graduates.
Now, Pete Weber, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I've recently heard somebody say that, and I'm going to quote, private fundraising provides universities with a layer of excellence that the state no longer provides. And that's absolutely the case. I mean, the Jordan School of Agriculture wouldn't be here, you know, without private fundraising. The You know, Water Technology Center that that Bill referenced earlier. I mean, I don't know if it's well known, but the university is hiring, I think it's 8, maybe 10 professors for water technology. That's been made possible through donations from the private sector, Claude Laval, among others. So, you know, it's absolutely essential. Let me just make one other very brief remark, because I think this needs to be put in context. Since 1980, California has increased spending on corrections by 436%, while spending on higher education has declined by 13%. I mean, that's outrageous, but the way you make it up, so long as the, you know, state continues these absurd policies, the way you make it up is through private fundraising.
So, Bill, I think that Pete was saying that it's really the icing on the cake, all this fundraising. Maybe it's the cake now in state funding, but what do you think about all this fundraising that President Welty's been doing?
Well, I think, thank goodness he was successful, because I'd hate to think where Fresno State would be without it. And with the cutbacks in state funding, it's imperative that college presidents be rainmakers. They have to go out and sell their university, and they're competing. And I think one measure is that when John Welty came there, Fresno State was looked at maybe as, you know, a middle-rung CSU. Now it's one of the campuses that the chancellor is very proud of and the trustees are very proud of. And the programs at Fresno State are often cited as, you know, models for other schools to emulate. So I know that some professors feel like, boy, Fresno State isn't what it used to be. Part of that might be tradition, and they may have blinders, but part of that is the reality of the state funding cuts. I'm sure that John Welty would tell you, you know, this isn't what he signed on for when he came here 22 years ago. He never forecast that there would be the spending cuts that all the CSU campuses have had to endure.
Yeah, and that's kind of a new thing for a CSU president. That before his tenure, that was kind of unusual for a Cal State president to be out there doing that kind of fundraising. He kind of saw that early on and really was aggressive about it. Let's talk about this. Bottom line, Pete Weber, has President Welty left Fresno State better than he found it?
Oh, of course he has. You know, I've got a pretty good perspective on this because both my daughters graduated from Fresno State shortly before Dr. Welty arrived, and they married boys who went to school at the same time. And so I spent a fair amount of time at the university then. And I mean, you know, as Dr. Mee has mentioned, the facilities. Look at, you know, the Madden Library and the Save Mart Center, and the, I mean, you go on and on and on. I mean, you know, the academic programs, the extracurricular programs. I mean, I think it's all improved in a big way.
Bill, what do you think? What's the bottom line with President Welty's tenure?
Well, I think he's really improved the university, and Fresno State was fortunate that they had a man with his vision and willingness to take chances. Otherwise, it would have gone backwards. That's the reality of the state budget cuts. And the one point I want to make also is that he created this identity that Fresno State was an opportunity university and began marketing the school to match the Valley demographics and saying, we want first-generation college students at this university. And I think something that's not talked about, but last year there was a study of what schools give the biggest bang for the buck for first-generation college students and which schools graduate a higher percentage of first-generation college students than would be expected based on their budget and the skills of the students coming in. And Fresno State was cited as one of the best in the country. I think I don't hear people talk about that, but to me, that's a really big deal.
I want to end with this. I want to get each of you to kind of talk about this for a second. I'll start with you, Pete Mijas. I know you probably think that obviously he left it better than he found it, but what's his enduring legacy? If there was one thing you said, boy, this is his enduring legacy to the university, what would that be?
I think Bill McEwen captured it the day after President Welty's resignation came on paper. He said that the next president, the bar has been raised so high in terms of not only what people perceive of themselves, the students, the professors, but the community. So he's raised the bar high. And the fact that, and Bill mentioned risk, he was willing. You don't find that quality oftentimes in university presidents. The Save Mart Center, the goal of setting $215 million fundraising in times, economic times, but be able to risk it and reach it. So I think this, the vision that he had, but the bottom line is, I think he genuinely cared about the students in this community.
Pete Weber, what do you think President Welty's enduring legacy is going to be?
In a sentence, he made Fresno State the principal engine of prosperity for the San Joaquin Valley.
And Bill, we'll end with you. What do you think the enduring legacy of President Welty is going to be?
He didn't let criticism deter him, but he would listen to his critics, and if things needed to be fixed, he went about fixing them. He never gave up on trying to improve things. He was never satisfied with things the way they were.
Okay, up next, more on the 22-year tenure of President John Welty of California State University, Fresno.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking with Pete Weber, a member of the Fresno State President's Search Advisory Committee, Bill McEwen, editorial board writer for the Fresno Bee, and Dr. Pete Mijas, chair of the President's Search Committee. We know there's been a lot of discussion about the secrecy surrounding the selection of the next president of California State University, Fresno. While the CSU system has defended its closed process on the grounds that a secret process will attract more experienced candidates who don't want their current employer to know that they're looking, the Fresno Bee has argued for a more open process. So, Pete Mijas, you're on the trustee selection committee, and you've been in politics where open meeting requirements are the norm. Why have a secret process here?
Well, I prefer to use the term confidentiality. Secret process, which I know the media loves to use, implies a draconian, evil planning session, and nothing could be further from the truth. Listen, in 2010, the trustees recognized that we were facing a serious problem with the majority, actually over 35% of our presidents, getting ready to retire. Subsequently, we need to take a look at how did we search for our presidents, what was our compensation in terms of like institutions throughout the nation. So we brought in some of the best search firms in the country. We spent a whole year. Lou Monville, now our vice chair of the trustees, chaired it. And the entire board, this was public, and it was voted upon the process that we would change from a open policy to a confidential policy to protect. Not only the search people told us, if you want to get sitting presidents or high quality leadership, then most of these who are going to look at Fresno State or the CSU system need to be able to do it in confidentiality. Now, to balance that, I would simply say we have a community advisory which is made up of elected teachers, faculty members, elected students, people from the community that clearly have input. You know, I think it was once said that if three people, it's not a secret if three people know it and two are dead. And I think it was Benjamin Franklin that said that. So we have 17 people that know the process, that know the candidate. The community had an opportunity to give us input. And so we think it's a fair way, but a positive way to go.
Okay, Bill, you're the editorial page editor for the Fresno Bee. Why do you think the process should be open?
Well, first of all, sunlight is always an essential part of democracy. It is the taxpayers that are footing the bill for the California State University system. They have a right to know what's going on. In addition, the CSU system keeps saying we'll get better candidates. They've given no evidence of that, no actual data, no comparisons. In addition, there are many fine CSU presidents that have been lauded by the trustees. They were hired in a very open process. They got to meet the community. In addition, we find often that trustees are boosters, so they're trying to sell candidates on what's going on. By actually coming to the committee and meeting a cross-section of the community, community, they get to see the good of the community and the warts of the community. Our fear is that the trustees will sell the presidents on kind of a reality that is not accurate. Finally, on this, we just think that being open is a good way to go. And of course, executive search firms recommended secrecy, again, without providing any data, because that empowers them. They're now able to take candidates and send them on multiple searches, and it looks like they're very successful. So we just don't see any evidence that this is better, and the trustees want us to take their word on it.
Well, Pete Weber, you're on the advisory committee, and you've worked for Fortune 500 corporations. Briefly, what do you think?
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with public corporations, because this is, you know, this is a public institution. But I guess I don't really understand part of what Bill is saying, because the media clearly understands that the public good is sometimes best served through confidentiality. That's why they so tenaciously protect their sources. They protect their sources because they don't want unintended consequences to their sources, and because they know that failure of confidentiality can result in drying up their sources. You know, this is a situation in which we believe you're asking me not to continue.
No. Go ahead. I just want to get to some other things, though, because I know this is an important issue. But I want to get to some.
Bottom line is, you know, I think this is a situation in which the community is very well represented by student leaders, by faculty, and by members of the community with long records of distinguished service. And I wish the media would give us the same respect that we give them when they protect their sources.
Okay, you know, we're going to find out at the end of the day whether this was a successful process. We'll deal with that maybe in another show with the new president. Let's move on to some of the important issues for students in the Valley. You know, access cost and student success and graduation rates are kind of the big three issues in higher education. So, Pete Mias, we'll start with you. What advice would you give the next president to improve access to Fresno State?
Well, some of those things are out of the next president's control. When the state cuts your budget 37%, now you don't have the space nor the classes to be able to offer them.
More fundraising.
Having said that, though, the state budget cuts prevented CSU from being able to meet student demands and have caused CSU to turn away between 15,000 and 25,000 eligible students per year for the past 3 years. You talk about cutting about access. Now, however, this year, with an increase in our funding, we've enrolled 6,000 more students this year. Another reason for access is important. We have 445,000 students, the largest system of higher education in the nation. 55% of our students' tuition is totally paid for by Cal Grants, Pell Grants, 55%. 71% of the students have received over $3.6 billion in terms of financial aid. So we think in terms of trying financially, California is one of the biggest recipients of the Pell Grants. We think also academically, and we can talk about that later, preparing students to be eligible and to reduce the number of remediation classes is an important way a president can reach out to the community. But most importantly, and it was mentioned earlier, Fresno State was a normal school teaching college. That's why our teaching preparation program is so important to make a difference for access to the Central Valley.
Pete, I want to ask you kind of about the cost issue. You've been in business. Is there anything a Cal State president or a Fresno State president can do to control costs?
Oh, absolutely. I think you have to line up your strategic plan with your budget expenditures, and you have to do this. Is not something you do once every 5 years. You do it every single year, and you track and you see whether or not you're getting the best bang for the buck relative to the objectives that you've set out for the university. And every institution ought to do that.
Bill, what about success and graduation rates? Are there any initiatives you'd like to see the next president initiate to improve the graduation rates of Fresno State students?
First, on that last question, I think the next president at Fresno State should have some great background in online college courses. That would be a big advantage because this is a coming wave and it should be used for general education classes. Also, San Joaquin Valley students have preference to Fresno State. So if Fresno State continues its relationship with the Valley school districts, there will be more access for Valley students into the CSU. So I think that's got to be a priority. And then as far as graduation rates, again, that is working with the high school districts throughout the Valley and getting the courses to match what is being taught at the high school level so students can come in and quickly access Fresno State without remediation. I think Pete Mihos made a great point on that.
Well, you know what? We've only got about 45 seconds left. So in 15 seconds, each of you, I want to ask you, what do you see as the future for higher education in the San Joaquin Valley? Pete Mihos, you go first.
I think with great leadership, we have great potential. We're growing here in the Valley. And I think the state of California needs to meet its commitment to higher education. So I think with the right leadership, with proper funding from the state of California, we're going to be just fine.
Okay. Pete Weber?
We live in an area that has had double-digit unemployment for most of the last three decades. This university has to be completely committed to trying to change that. The dean, the deans, the provost, the university president, they all have to be committed to that.
Bill, last word.
Very simple. Education is job one for the San Joaquin Valley, and I think in the last 5 years, people have come to recognize that, and I think we're going to be successful.
Well, I want to thank Bill McEwen, editorial board writer for the Fresno Bee, Dr. Pete Mihos, CSU system trustee and chair of the President's Search Committee, and Pete Weber, chair of the Executive Committee of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley and a member of the University President's Search Advisory Committee. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Matty Daily, by just logging on to our website at mattyinstitute.org.
The Matty Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for the Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.